It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. Today, wearing it on your sleeve. Why fashion matters. So, Jackie, I have to ask, what are you wearing?
I am wearing a black boiled wool Cossack coat from the 1950s. It has a capelet. And this piece was actually a gift to me from my colleague, my NPR colleague, Renee Montaigne.
You might recognize that voice. It's Jackie Leiden, longtime foreign correspondent and host on NPR. But lately, she's switched from covering distant wars to creating her own startup, an independent podcast about fashion. It's called The Seams. Some of the segments have already aired on NPR. So, Jackie, why create a whole new program about fashion?
Well, I had to do something. So there was that. There was that little bit of impetus. But we had actually started The Seams last year. And here, Anne, is the biggest reason. I felt that in my years as a journalist here, I remember saying to one of my young colleagues, what do I do next? Because I had hosted a lot of shows. I'd done a jillion stories. And my young colleague said, Jackie, you should cover fashion. And I said, yes, but not hemlines and trends and seasons. Vogue can do that and does it really well, along with many other outlets. What we need to do is connect the anthropology of fashion to public radio audiences, to basically people who had questions that involve historical context or the significance or the memory of clothing. This tiny rural workshop represents one thread of a supply chain that loops from Mexico's plains and mountains to catwalks from Tokyo to Amsterdam. I've been brought to this back alley in Tenancingo, 2 hours from Mexico City, by one of the country's leading designers, Carla Fernandez. She takes these handmade textiles and manipulates them into something contemporary.
So this is a rebozo.
She unfurls a blue and white fringe shawl, intricately loomed into a tight herringbone pattern nearly 8 feet long.
You can use it as a vest, and then you can turn it, and you will see that it becomes more as a blouse or a sweater. And also, we leave the fringes of the rebozo, so you can actually see that this is all handmade.
You know, what's funny is I think I can probably count the number of stories I've heard about fashion or clothing on NPR on the fingers of one hand.
Yes, and I bet you I did about four of them. We used to never at NPR do stories about fashion. And indeed, if you ask NPR audiences, I know this because I looked at the research, do you care about fashion? 95% of them said no. But if you ask them, do you care about culture? 95% say yes. And I think what has been missing and the reason that people think they don't care about fashion, it's because it's told as a story of very shallow consumerism. If it is told as a story of memento, clothing that is specific to time and place and narrative, it just becomes a much wider and deeper conversation.
Now, your connection to fashion dates back a long way, right? I think, aren't you the daughter of a former runway model?
I'm the daughter of a former department store model. My mother used to model at Gimbel Schuster in Milwaukee back in the 1950s. In fact, I used to model with her.
You did? How old were you?
Three. And I will say I don't specifically remember the modeling, but she was a great seamstress. She taught all three of her daughters to sew. I made all my clothes in high school and a lot of them in college. So the whole notion of making, wearing, significance, and history, for me, that was always a part of the world of clothing.
But so, Jackie, clearly you speak the language of clothing, but you're creating a podcast for the millions of us who do not speak the language of clothing and who are perfectly happy to get up in the morning and pull on the only pair of jeans that are still clean. So what would you, with your public radio editorial sensibility and your deep connection to the language of clothing, what would you want to cover instead?
So, for example, the first piece was 50 years of the Ebony Fashion Fair and how the co-founder of Ebony Magazine, Eunice Johnson, decides that she will go to Milan and Paris and acquire haute couture. She then turned around, took these gowns and items, which she had bought herself on those little gilded chairs over in Paris and Italy, and put it on young African-American men and women. And then she staged hundreds of catwalk shows around the United States. They would do it 10 months out of the year, and they did that for 50 years. The Ebony Fashion Fair started in 1958 in the Grand Ballroom of Chicago's Conrad Hilton Hotel. Then it hit the road, from splashy big city venues to high school gyms and tiny whistle stops. The young models traveled by bus, with seats removed for their long legs, all over the country and throughout the Jim Crow South. Racial tensions were boiling over. A young woman from Vicksburg named Del Handy was with them then.
It almost felt like steam coming up from the pavement. You could just feel it. Our name was on our bus at one time, you know, Ebony Fashion Fair, and I remember them taking the name off the bus so as not to call attention.
Restaurants were off limits. John Johnson, Ebony's publisher, knew the models were aspirational figures, and he wanted them seen that way.
Mr. Johnson had said when we went down south that we could never go in the back door of the restaurant.
Instead, the white bus driver would go get takeout. This is just one story. You know, the other thing that told us we were onto something was the number of museums that are doing fashion shows. Mm-hmm. And this has grown by leaps and bounds. When I say fashion shows, I'm talking about exhibits with fashion at the center, as Ebony was. Ebony started at the Chicago History Museum.
So what about, are there political or economic stories to tell about the seamy side of fashion? Child labor, Korean sweatshops, you know, stories about the production side of the textile and garment industry.
I think that we cannot ignore that. Clearly, that is the underbelly of particularly what is called fast fashion.
What do you mean fast fashion?
So fast fashion is what so many of us acquire today. H&M and Uniqlo are two of the biggest purveyors of fast fashion. Fashion that costs $5, as much as a cup of coffee, maybe less.
You're basically talking about it's the fast food of fashion.
Exactly. And they keep it moving through the stores, and they change the merchandise around a lot. And that kind of cheap, fast fashion, first of all, it winds up in landfills often, you know, within a couple of years. And the human capital, the labor, is often very, very exploitive. So we shop for things that seem like they are good value to us. But what is the source of it?
Jackie, I'm curious, just trying to think ahead. Imagine that the kind of coverage you're talking about happens and becomes a wave, and that we all develop a kind of clothing and fashion literacy. What changes, do you think? What changes about what it's like to get dressed in the morning?
Well, I'm sure that you, Anne, have looked at wonderful pictures from back in the 1940s and 50s and how beautiful people looked. Now take a plane from LA to New York and take a good look around. We have taken the whole notion that our appearance doesn't matter kind of to, you know, a whole level that I think sort of devolves. And it isn't particularly.
You're not somebody who wears sweatpants on airplanes, I take it.
And I don't, as a matter of fact. So I, you know, I'm not saying that there's no room for comfort. Of course there is. But there is a need for style. There's a need for the articulation of the spirit. There is a need to be bold when we're feeling like little mice. There is a need to stand out. These are deep human needs. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you take out your charge card. Fashion's aspirational, but it might also feel exclusive. Mm-hmm. And it isn't. It isn't. There isn't a human body type that can't have a sartorial significance.
Jackie Leiden is the host and founder of The Seams, a new reporting series and podcast about fashion.